On a Monday, it is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We will talk about a number of proposals gaining momentum at the Capitol. The Assembly's Democratic Minority Leader Gordon Hintz is on the line. So here's a roadmap. We'll touch down on the revenue estimate surplus and whether that might spell a tax cut. We'll talk about the dairy crisis and the legislative package there. But first, redistricting and the tension over redrawing political maps next year. How do you think lawmakers should redraw Wisconsin's election maps after the 2020 census? What do you want to know about lawmakers' work so far this session? Join the State Cap 800-642-1234. Gordon Hintz represents voters from Oshkosh in the 54th Assembly District. He was first elected in 2006. Representative Hintz, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So the governor is forming this commission to recommend how the state's election maps should be redrawn after the census, and the commission's members will exclude elected officials like yourself, with the goal of this being nonpartisan. Do you support excluding elected officials from this commission?
I do. I mean, I think the public deserves it. We work for the public, and the public should pick their politicians, not the other way around. And I think the people in Wisconsin understand what has happened in their state, that the reason there's a disconnect between the policies that the public would like to see happen, the challenges facing our state, often aren't met with policies and proposals and solutions at the state level that reflect that. And I think they're understanding more and more it's because the system is rigged in a way that determines an outcome that kind of disregards their input. So I think Governor Evers is really taking the lead on something that the public wants, to create a system, that puts the public back at the decision-making process.
But what is the point of this commission when this is not how our Constitution says how maps are drawn, when whoever controls the legislature after this year's election makes the maps?
Well, look, the Republicans have kind of tried to, they're defensive over the fact that they know that everybody is on to what they've done over the last 8 years. Governor Evers has put forward a proposal, that will have a process out there that will create, a process for how we should move forward as a state. My guess, based on where public support around the state for something like this is, they should take that into consideration when the maps are drawn going forward. I mean, we know the traditional process involves maps passing the legislature. If there was a process that took us out of it, that involved the public, that created a process like we've seen in Iowa or other states, I would look at that and look at this as the first step. And that's what it really should be viewed at. The first step in the redistricting process, setting things up for the 2022 election.
Representative Hintz, let's look at dairy. Governor Evers called the legislature into a special session on the dairy crisis. He's proposed this package estimated to cost $8.5 million. Do you think the proposals, as you look at them, go far enough to address what is happening on our dairy farms?
Well, they don't go far enough to address everything that's happening on our dairy farms, and I don't think that anybody, including Governor Evers, says that they are. But we have an obligation as state lawmakers to do everything possible to make sure that we're supporting our dairy industry. It's such an important part of who we are as a state as it goes through really transformative changes. And a lot of that is trying to create new markets, trying to have the support services either through UW Extension, which the governor's proposed additional staff, or through the direct health services and rural development that we need in communities. Some of the kind of things that can support and make our dairy farmers better be able to compete in the future. Those are the kind of things that we need to support. And I'll remind folks, Governor Evers introduced some of these things in his budget. This isn't a last minute thing. These are things that deserve more consideration and a higher priority from Republican leadership.
Some of the bills this session are similar to legislation in Congress that would regulate food labeling and specifically taking aim at products like almond milk. Should the government restrict what can and can't be called milk?
I know that we've had some hearings on those in Wisconsin. Look, I want to support the dairy industry. I know that we have had bipartisan support for those things. I don't necessarily have a problem with it. I can tell you that I think 90% of the milk that we produce in this state is used and processed into cheese. But I don't know if the milk labeling is going to be the biggest thing in the world, but I certainly want to do everything possible to support our farmers. If this can be demonstrated to do so, then let's do it. If it's just kind of, a cute game, I'm usually not that interested in those things, but we'll see if it moves forward.
As you say, do everything possible to support our farmers. I'm wondering, outside of this package of bills to focus on the dairy industry, are there any additional steps that you want to take to address the dairy crisis beyond what the governor has proposed?
Well, I represent Oshkosh. It's a relatively urban district, but everybody that grew up in Wisconsin and is hearing these heartbreaking stories about mostly smaller farms, older farmers, families didn't take over, didn't see the opportunity, prices having been down for a while, wants to see us do something. And there's really big changes going on in the market that are making it harder and harder for folks to compete. And our rural landscape is changing. I think the key thing is there's got to be a comprehensive rural economic development strategy that includes things like broadband, that includes making sure that there's enough healthcare providers in a community to make it a place that people want to live. I think there's a tremendous amount of opportunity in parts of our state that have been under-supported, under-invested in, and have been on the losing end of too many global economic changes. So I think, it can't just be about throwing money from the federal government, at farmers so they can buy a couple more years. It has to be about what opportunities exist so that perhaps children will want to take over the family farm or get involved. And, how do we make, rural economic, rural communities more prosperous, for people to want to make those investments.
Talking about a range of legislation and issues with Representative Gordon Hintz, who leads Democrats in the State Assembly. Your questions, your thoughts, 800-642-1234. As our state loses an average of 2 dairy farms a day, do you support the governor's proposals to address the dairy crisis? Representative Hintz, after the governor announced the special session, Republicans said the proposals were too little too late and underscored Democrats' lack of concern for rural communities. Have Democrats not given enough attention to rural issues this session?
It's odd that the Republicans are the ones that removed many of these proposals from the budget, that cut the money. Republicans are the ones that still can't find it to, approve the funding for mental health, care for, for rural communities and farmers out there. So I don't think this is something the public wants us to see be political about. I don't think there is Republican and Democrats, that think that we shouldn't be supporting our dairy farmers. But ultimately, it's the right thing to do. Let's come together, get behind the governor's plan, which I think is realistic, which will be proactive about providing support that can help open up new markets, can help our farmers be as competitive as possible, and provide additional support that they need right now. I haven't heard a lot from Republicans. What we've seen in a lot of cases, whether it's homelessness or groundwater, is the governor takes the lead. They introduce a half measure. It's certainly better than nothing, but, we should be doing everything possible. I think this is a good start. Let's go back to, getting, where the governor started us at the beginning of the year, making this a priority.
Assembly Democratic Minority Leader Gordon Hintz is with us as we get his take on legislation circulating at the Capitol. How do you think Republicans can work with a Democratic governor? Where should the parties dig in? Where do you see room for compromise? What's your top priority? What bills are you following? Join in 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. More State Cap with Representative Gordon Hintz in just a moment. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We are touching down on proposals moving through the Capitol, getting your take along the way. Where should lawmakers increase their efforts? Is your top issue agriculture or crime, education, water quality? Assembly lawmakers clashed last week over proposals that would increase criminal penalties. What do you think about what's called the Tougher on Crime package? How do you want Wisconsin to handle prison overcrowding? Bring your questions, your insights to the conversation, 800-642-1234. Tweet us, WPR Mornings. And Democratic Representative Gordon Hintz of Oshkosh stays with us. Representative, on Thursday, the Assembly held a public hearing for this package of Republican-authored bills that seek stiffer criminal penalties, more reporting from the criminal justice system. Let's hear from Senator David Craig from Big Bend, who spoke in favor at the hearing.
I continue to see news story after news story after news story about repeat offenses, and the repeat offenses are becoming more and more aggravated and more serious, and people are dying.
Do you agree with Senator Craig's assessment there of increasing concerns with crime and the need for lawmakers to respond?
Well, I think the biggest question is, how do we keep the public safe? What's the best way that we can reduce recidivism for people that reoffend and make it as easy as possible that they will be less likely to reoffend? I mean, the legislature took the biggest step in corrections reform. It was the best thing that we had done. Probably in the last 8 years, when we had almost unanimous vote to take the first steps to close Lincoln Hills and reform our juvenile correction system to have a more successful model, which both reinvests in people's lives and keeps the public safer. And that was okay to do when Governor Walker was facing a tough reelection. But now that Governor Evers is here, Republicans have changed their tune. They're refusing to do the second part of Lincoln Hills juvenile corrections reform that they promised. And they're kind of doubling down on the strong and wrong that, you know, other states have moved away from. I mean, the most conservative states in the country have embraced corrections reform, like Democrats have been promoting in Wisconsin, that reduce crime as well as reduce the number of people who are incarcerated. So increasing penalties, increasing our prison population. 45 states in the country have reduced their prison population while Wisconsin is increasing theirs.
Well, you meant
cost tax. So it's, I mean, we're heading in the wrong direction, and this seems to be more of the same kind of strong and wrong.
Quickly there on Lincoln Hills for a moment, will the legislature make its deadline of closing Lincoln Hills and Copper Lake by July 2021?
No. I mean, Republicans have walked away from this altogether. I mean, they're, you know, they don't want Governor Evers to be, you know, successful. They everything they did last session will be, you know, forgotten as if nothing has happened. They've completely walked away from it. They're not interested, just like their number one goal all along was to make sure that Governor Evers didn't get a whole lot accomplished. And this is a big one.
Well, let's look a little closer on this Tougher on Crime package. Do you support any proposals in the package, like expanding public access to information about criminal cases or expanding how much information police report to the state about crimes in their communities?
You know, we'll look at each individual proposal, but given how this was packaged and given that it's all come together at a time when Republicans have walked away from sensible correction reforms that we took a step on that other states have done, if there's something that is, has merit that we're hearing from law enforcement and other criminal justice reform advocates that can actually provide a benefit, then great. But if it's out there to kind of stroke the fears in an election season, not as much.
Let's go to Lisa now in Madison. Lisa, hi.
Hi, I'm just calling regarding the problem that we have with mentally ill people being placed prisoner jail and not receiving treatment. I have a brother with schizophrenia, and for 25 years, it's been cycled in and out of jail. He's offered mental health court, but if you're still paranoid that you believe the medication being offered is part of a plot against you, you don't comply, so then you sit in jail. And right now he's been in solitary confinement since November, 23 hours a day, and his trial may not be for 4 more months, and this is for taking somebody's dog who he thought wanted to be with him. So, and this is a crisis, so I would encourage anybody to read the book Bedlam that addresses this issue across the country. And that is contributing to overpopulation.
Lisa, thanks for the call. And Representative Hintz, Lisa describes a situation close to her when mental illness and being behind bars they collide.
Yeah, I want to thank Lisa for sharing that. And we have stories like that are all too common. And I think the statistics show that, and I don't want to get it wrong, but a pretty significant population that is in our prison system suffers from mental illness. And, you know, if we're going to have the kind of intervention and care needed, obviously it's going to be have to have the resources. And we really need to be smart about, you know, who we're keeping behind bars, what role that plays in both, you know, their penalty and service to for their, you know, crime, but also is it something that can be better served on the outside or with a diversion program where they get the help and support that they need? But there's, you know, no one's really benefiting from a situation that she described. And again, it comes out being smarter on crime, being smarter about our management of the criminal justice system and the resources that are out there so we can put correcting back in the term corrections.
We're discussing bills and proposals with Representative Gordon Hintz. He leads Democrats in the state assembly. Your questions as well, 800-642-1234. Let's go to Kay now in Milwaukee. Hi, Kay.
Hi. It's my understanding that 16 other states, including the District of Columbia, now have laws modeled on Oregon's Death with Dignity Act. I'm wondering, what is the present status of Wisconsin's Compassionate Choices Act?
Kay, thanks for the call. Wisconsin's Compassionate Choices allows a person who's suffering from a terminal illness to choose to medically end their life. Representative?
I know that the bill has been introduced again. My colleague, Representative Sandy Pope, has introduced it numerous times. Unfortunately, I don't believe that it's received a hearing, but I know that I've been a supporter of it in the past. And I think, you know, too many bills don't receive hearings, so we can't raise the kind of issues and questions and highlight, you know, why it might be a good or a bad idea out there. And, you know, it's disappointing. But no, we're not being as, I think, proactive as we can on things that are going to be, you know, that are out there that I think a lot of people would like to have the legal option to do that, you know, considers what's best for themselves and their family.
There were recent estimates from the state's tax collections that have Republicans talking about approving a tax cut this year. What kind of tax cut could you see Democrats getting behind?
Well, you know, I think in Governor Evers' budget, there was money put into a homestead tax credit. Property tax is the one that Wisconsin has the second highest property taxes. We're over-dependent. Our local communities have fewer revenue options. And obviously, it's the bill that is the least popular that you get right during the holiday season. And so I think Democrats are open to a lot of opportunities. But when you look at the fact that Republicans left $300 million of federal health care dollars on the table and cut funding from the governor's proposal on the UW system, cut funding from mental health programs that support our kids in schools, things that rhetorically they support. I really think, you know, that we should reconsider some of the things that Governor Evers put in the budget that Republicans cut simply because they, you know, didn't, you know, best use the prioritize the resources they had available to them. But, you know, if there's a sensible tax cut that's not just playing gotcha games after we address things that I think we've set our priority. Remember, when they refused to take up the governor's special session on gun violence, they all said, we need more mental health intervention in schools. And then when we had some incidents, including in my community in Oshkosh, you know, that was the call again. So I would hope any new first dollar that's available that we decide to make decisions on regarding the new surplus be put back into education, mental health, and restoring some of those cuts from Governor Evers' budget.
Let's touch on water. A bipartisan group of lawmakers, they're circulating a package of bills to address water quality. And coming out of a task force of bills would create a $10 million fund for water initiatives, establishing a panel to oversee how the money is spent. Could this legislation face challenges passing the assembly this month?
I think any proposal that, is bipartisan, that has some success, that might do anything, that the governor has made a priority, I think is going to face challenges because it's a priority of the governor. I mean, look, we've had the least productive legislative session, you know, in the last 20 years at least. And I think that's a conscious choice by Republican leadership who have kind of drowned, you know, the process is kind of ground to a halt. We're far behind what we've seen in past sessions in terms of number of days met, number of bills signed into law.
even under divided government. And, you know, they're telling us we're going to adjourn in a couple of weeks. So these are good ideas. The governor called last year the year of clean drinking water. He's taken the lead both in terms of remediating problems that are existing, as well as taking the kind of steps to help clean water going forward. I think there's a good start in some of the task force bills, and I would hope that they would be taken seriously and moved through. But a lot of this seems to be, that it gets out there, gets some headlines, and then, you know, Republicans refuse to bring it up because they want to play political games. But I hope the public is out there and they get behind these, and hopefully we'll get something done this session.
Representative Hintz, thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Gordon Hintz is the Democratic Minority Leader of the Assembly. He represents voters from Oshkosh. Coming up, we talk with the governor's pick to lead Wisconsin's professional licensing agency. Don Krim remains one of the few cabinet members unconfirmed by the state Senate, more than a year on the job. What questions do you have for the secretary designee? Join in 800-642-1234. Back with more State Cap and secretary designee Don Krim right after this news update on the Ideas Network. Right now, we're exploring the work of the State Department of Safety and Professional Services. It's a department that tends to be lower profile, but it regulates hundreds of occupational licenses. Also, it's relatively new on the scene. It was created in 2011 with the merger of the Commerce Department and the Regulation and Licensing Department. Are you a licensed professional? What questions do you have for the head of this department? Do you work in a commercial building? What do you want to know about inspections and safety? We're at 800-642-1234. Don Krim is Secretary Designee of the Department of Safety and Professional Services. Secretary Krim, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you very much.
Well, how has your year been? You have a year under your belt. You head up this department. How has it been?
Busy.
Very, in one word.
Very busy. It's been wonderful to work under Governor Evers and to be able to provide safety for the citizens, to be able to service them. People don't realize the depth and breadth of the agency. I often say we're the largest of the small and the smallest of the mid. And I say that because we are 250 employees. We have five offices around the state, Hayward, Onalaska, Waukesha, Green Bay, and here in Madison. I have been to all those offices twice. And we touch relatively one in three Wisconsinites. When you shop at a big box store, we've reviewed those plans. When you think about the lifespan, when you go to the doctor's office, we administer that license. When you think about your wellness checks, we are part of the individuals that are counselors. We administer over 240 occupational licenses. So when you think about good, solid, life-sustaining work and wages, we are a part of that conversation. And so we are really trying to deliver the best service we can, whether it's safety in any public building or whether it's occupational licensing.
Yeah, and so there are five divisions within the department. Is that right?
That is correct.
How does that work then? What are these divisions?
So the five divisions, the one is management services, and I consider them the foundation of the agency. That's where your human resources lies, making sure your equipment is working, things of that nature, just kind of the foundation, make sure everything goes well. Then we have policy development, and that's where over 100 boards, councils, and committees are housed. Those committees actually work to administer work on behalf of the professions. We have boards that have peer individuals from different agencies, from different licensees that are helping to make decisions, set standards around continuing education. And then, unfortunately, if disciplinary matters occur, it's those boards who are making decisions around recommendations around discipline. But they're also setting standards for those particular occupations.
And this could be occupations cradle to grave, from medical to funeral directors,
funeral
to architects,
directors to architects.
Barbers,
tattoo artists. It's a wide range. But if you think about the careers that are out there, a lot of times people just think of the basics, the nurses, the doctors, the social workers, but there are many, many occupations. And so whatever people are thinking about doing, it's out there. And there are standards around what you should be doing if you're going to be working with the public.
This is a relatively new department. How have you seen it change over the last 8-9 years since it was created?
Well, it's still really coming into its own. Part of it is with the merger of regulation and licensing and commerce, they all had systems that they operated, that they did their processing, their credentialing and licensing and things under. And we are just in the middle of a modernization project where we're trying to bring all those resources together. Right now, there's about 4 or 5 different technology applications that do portions, and we're trying to move it all into an electronic safety licensing system.
So it can be like one clearinghouse, if
right.
you will.
And so that processes can be more systematic, so you're not working from one system to the next. It can be a little more seamless. And I think that'll help with some of the efficiencies that we need to undertake. But also in that policy division, we have the prescription drug monitoring program, and we're really using that program to stem some of the opioid abuse, working with pharmacies and pharmacists and things to ensure that prescribing is happening at the appropriate levels, and trying to just ensure the safety of people who are needing those pain drugs, that make sure that they're being monitored properly, and that their patients and doctors are working closely together for appropriate prescriptions.
We're talking with Dawn Krim. She is Secretary Designee of the Department of Safety and Professional Services. Do you work as a contractor? Did you experience a delay in the review of your plans after you submitted them? How do you feel about how the state handles the review of building plans? Join in 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Let's bring in Andrew now, joining us from Waukesha. Hi, Andrew.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I had a question because recently I had to get a copy of my HSED transcript, and it ended up costing me $30. The office wouldn't take a credit card. They weren't able to process credit cards. And I'm just wondering, why does it cost me as a citizen money to get a copy of that transcript? And, you know, when is it going to be updated so that you can simply, you know, log on, put in your identifying information and get a copy of the transcript?
Andrew, thank you for that question. So, as I mentioned, we have that electronic monitoring system that we're moving toward. It's been about a 4-year project, and we are moving to an environment where we're able to take credit cards more easily and be able to process fees. Right now, the way the old system is set up, it is not as seamless, and so that's why that is taking some time, but we're getting there. And then when you think about transcript fees, unfortunately, just like with your college, just like at your high school, there's often a fee for transcripts. And so we are like the other institutions in which that is something that we do charge for.
Let's turn to Foxconn here for a moment. You toured the Foxconn campus in Mount Pleasant last month, and your agency is directly responsible for reviewing and approving all the building plans. What has your relationship been like to the project?
Oh, our relationship is really on the ground. We have our inspectors go out at least once a week, and they're monitoring progress. We do review the plans, and then we inspect on-site the plans as they are put into motion. There's also weekly updates with our agency, DOA members, and Foxconn, ensuring that the project is on time, ensuring that any questions or concerns that come up, we are at the table. So very responsive. I was pleased to actually tour the site. I've actually been there twice. What I appreciate most is the relationship that our staff has with the contractors, the building managers, people that are on the ground doing the work every day. And so we are closely monitoring, doing the work, reviewing the plans and inspecting at Foxconn like we do with all our other projects.
Let's look at confirmation here for a moment. You're one of 7 members of Governor Evers' cabinet who is awaiting confirmation. Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald commented on confirmations during his year-end news conference.
I don't know that anybody is necessarily going to make the case to vote down a secretary at this point, but I know there's still concerns with some of them.
Secretary Designee, are you concerned about not being confirmed after what happened in the state Senate when denying Wisconsin Agriculture Secretary Brad Paff's confirmation?
That was very difficult. We, as secretaries, all have a body of work and a body of knowledge, so the governor selected us to bring that expertise to bear in the work that we do on behalf of our agencies. We are awaiting confirmation. I'm hopeful. I am demonstrating my ability to do the job every day, and I'm focused really on the work and ensuring that I'm running the agency in the best manner that I can.
Is that in the back of your mind there as you do your day-to-day work in the agency?
I give it thought. Yes, I do think about it. But what I realize are the things that I can control, and that's something that's outside of my control. And so I believe if I'm doing the best work possible, that it should come to bear.
Last year, Senator Chris Kapinga and Senator Dewey Strible, they noted the backlog of license applications and commercial construction plans. Why did this backlog take place? What was going on?
Well, unfortunately, our agency has been understaffed for some time. We've been using a lot of the resources of overtime and limited term employees. And so we continue to bury out from the backlog. It was there when I arrived. And what I'm trying to do is have some systematic approaches where we're really looking at efficiencies. But at the end of the day, because of the volume, we process nearly 1 million licenses a year. So because of the volume, we need people hours. And so we're utilizing all the tools that we have. We're working with our legislators on looking at some of the standards. So I'm looking at long-term and short-term solutions so that I can work collaboratively to be able to meet some of the challenges.
Is there a backlog right now?
Yes, there is. With commercial building, we are just about at the 4 to 6 weeks. The other part of what's happening, the perfect storm, is as we're putting in the modernization project, the same people that are doing the plan reviews and doing the ground and the doing the work on the ground are also a part of helping build the system and train the system. So they're essentially doing double duty. And so we're working hard to try and be as efficient as possible with what we have to use.
We have the Secretary Designee of the Department of Safety and Professional Services, Don Krim, is here. Are you a nurse, a social worker, perhaps a tattoo artist? Did you face any hurdles getting certified? What do you do to get a license in your profession? Did you pursue an occupational license recently? What was the process like? Join in 800-642-1234. Back for more State Cap in just a moment here on the Ideas Network. It is the State Capitol Report on a Monday. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The Secretary Designee of the Department of Safety and Professional Services, Don Krim, announced a cut to credentialing fees last month. The new structure lowers fees for 3 out of 4 licenses issued over the biennium ending in 2021. Credential holders in 170 occupations will experience either a reduction or no increase in their initial or renewal license fees. So are you an architect, a barber, maybe a professional soil scientist or hydrologist? What is it like to get licensed and credentialed? We're at 800-642-1234, and Secretary Krim stays with us. Secretary, your department is tasked with plan review and building inspections. What is your relationship like with municipalities, with commercial buildings?
So the relationship that we have with municipalities is we authorize delegated agents. And so when I came into the office, I wanted to be sure to have a relationship with those delegated agents. So around the state, I've been visiting with them. And it's funny, many of them are like, this is the first time we've had a secretary come visit. And I say, well, you're my partner. You are an extension of our agency. And so it's important that we are on the same page. We understand the standards, that we're working together. Because as you've mentioned, with the amount of plan review, it's steep. And so the relationships and the collaborations with delegated agents bode well. And we've actually increased delegated agents since I've come on because we see that partnership as one that is viable in helping to ensure that plans are reviewed on time and done well. And we, with our limited staff, are not able to blanket the entire state.
Yeah, I mean, many people work each day in buildings. And what is inspections like? How often are these buildings inspected?
Well, with buildings, what you're looking at the initial from the ground up is they're reviewing the plans to ensure that the plan and the building is built to the specifications of the plan. And so it's not a one and done. There are multiple times as something is being built that the inspector goes back in and reviews a different stage of the building process. And so this relationship happens. It's hard to quantify it because some buildings are smaller and some are bigger, but it's a regular systematic way in which after the plan is reviewed, there are certain benchmarks that the inspectors are looking for as they go back in to inspect.
Well, let's take a call now. Madeline is joining us from Green Bay this morning. Hi, Madeline.
Hello. You know, I am really concerned about the children. There it seems to me no one is really looking out for the children. I myself sent in documentation on sexual activity regarding to young children, and one was a nurse, a case of a nurse who should have, is a mandatory reporter who didn't report. And then that I have heard back from the licensing board regarding that one. But then I also sent in documentation on an investigation with regard to a teacher and school administrator who did not report.
Madeline, I want to pause right there for Secretary Krim here. What is the process like in handling complaints and in the impact on licensing?
Well, what I will share is with our licensing boards, and nursing is one, they actually handle and administer the process. And so even though the boards are housed within our agency, they are independent bodies in which they have the ability to review reports and make designations. They work closely with our legal team to review the case and look at the documentation, but they ultimately are the ones who are making decisions. Regarding the teacher, we actually don't handle teacher licenses and teacher issues. That's the Department of Public Instruction.
Let's look at licensing here. On your one-year anniversary, you identified your decision to cut credential fees for professionals in the state as a key accomplishment last year. How will this make it easier, more seamless for people to get their licenses?
Well, we see it as a way of inviting people into professions, just realizing that these are great sustaining wage jobs. And so we want to make sure that people have few barriers to be able to practice. And so we're able to do that. But also we are a program revenue agency. So the amount of money we bring in is the amount that we should use to operate. And when you look at staffing over the years, our staffing has declined. Therefore, we're not needing to bring in as much money to operate. And so this was an opportunity to put more money back in the pockets of those who are utilizing the services of the agency because we're not needing to use the money that had been historically coming in because of these changes.
Why have you seen staffing decline?
It has actually has been just over time, the way the process works. It has not declined since I've arrived, but this was done based on the program revenue. Again, it's a formula to ensure that you're bringing in what you need to operate.
We're talking with Secretary Designee Don Krim of the Department of Safety and Professional Services, gathering your questions, your thoughts on the department, 800-642-1234. As you mentioned earlier, there are lots and lots of licenses. Do you know how many there are?
Well, we have over 244 occupations that we license. But remember, we only license those that are at our agency. We don't license lawyers or teachers or EMTs. Those are at DHS. So there's other agencies that handle licensing as well. We just handle the bulk of them.
And the new fee structure took effect last July. Will these fees remain the same over the next few years? How will that work?
Yep, they will remain the same at least for the next 2 years. We actually do a study every 2 years to determine the calculation to ensure that we're kind of on par.
Senator Kapinga commented on Senate Bill 541, focused on requiring reports on new occupational licenses during a public hearing a couple months ago.
Nationwide, this is a bipartisan effort to kind of rethink occupational licensing. There's policy experts from across the political spectrum. They've identified that this is a dramatic increase in licensed professions as a primary issue facing workers today.
How would this bill change how your department reviews new licenses?
Well, when we think about licenses, we're always thinking, is it fair? Is it balanced? Are we doing the right thing when you look at licensing? Our role is to actually implement, but we don't control whether licenses are put forward or taken off. That's actually the jurisdiction of the legislature. And so we follow their charge. I am a part of a multi-state occupational licensing consortium in which we're talking about what's fair and what's balanced, what's necessary. We all want to be able to ensure that we are balanced and our licensed approach. And so that's been good to see best practices around the country, to hear where people are making changes. And so I'm using that information to inform the work that we're doing. But it is important to ensure that the right level of licensing is in place. And, you know, above all, it's about safety. The license is about ensuring that the public can feel safe in the resource, well, in the services that they're accessing.
In the last few moments we have together, the department launched the Wisconsin Enhanced Prescription Drug Monitoring Program to combat the opioid epidemic back in 2017. How is your department working collaboratively with medical professionals?
Well, we're working very closely with EMTs as well as pharmacies and doctors around appropriate prescriptions. And we are able to look at where hot spots are, where maybe problems have occurred, so that all of those entities can be working together to ensure that they're prescribing appropriately. It really is about collaboration and working together to combat the opioid crisis.
What do you mean by hotspot very quickly?
Well, what I mean by that is sometimes we can see how drugs are prescribed through the enhanced program. And so we can look at and help physicians see how often people are receiving it, whether the dosage is correct, whether they've shopped at other pharmacies in nearby towns to try and pick up the prescription drugs. So we can see the movement and how patients are actually accessing what they need.
Secretary, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Don Krim is Secretary Designee of the Department of Safety and Professional Services. Just ahead, we spend the hour on redistricting in Wisconsin, what the process is like to redraw political maps following the 2020 census. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.